Hello, my name is Chip Ling. You are listening to Total EM. For this week's podcast, we are going to have Dr. Solberg being interviewed by Patrick Bafuma. This is another EMID podcast, and he's going to talk about her a little bit, but Dr. Solberg has her own website, and of course, she's on Twitter. That's how I think Patrick found everyone for these, but they are very good at their fields. I'm so glad that Patrick's been doing this EMID series. I know he's been learning a lot about podcasting and about infectious disease, as well as I have, especially on the ID side of things and how it relates to EM. So without further ado, let's go ahead and dive right into this topic.
I have with me Dr. Solberg from Bismarck, North Dakota, who's an interventional radiologist.
Hello, everyone.
And I wanted to have her on today to talk a little bit more about troubleshooting PICC lines. So Dr. Solberg, on my last shift, had a patient who came in who was getting some IV antibiotics for a bacteremia, and I ran into a little bit of trouble because their PICC line wouldn't flush, but I was very fortunate that I had someone nearby from IR who could help me troubleshoot. And kind of left me wondering, what happens if this happens in the middle of the night?
Sure, that's an excellent question, Patrick. We do have a fair amount of PICC lines malfunctioning for multiple reasons, which we'll get into shortly. Usually, if it just doesn't flush, I just encourage folks in the ER, especially, to flush it with a smaller syringe. You can exert many more pounds per square inch PSI with just using a smaller syringe, like a 3 milliliter flush. If you guys have those in your ER, works pretty great. If it doesn't flush with that, you can even get a 1 milliliter syringe and use that. If traditional syringes don't work in IR, we have syringes called medallion syringes, which are made of a different type of plastic, and they can actually exert even more pressure. But really, it's just the size of the syringe that I think is the most important.
What about other causes of failure to flush? Can there be something with body positioning or if the tube kinks? What are other possibilities of inability to flush the tube?
The thing that we were obviously worried about the most is, has the tube been pulled out a little bit or has it migrated? Is it still in the same spot when it was before? So for that, we can look at the catheter and see if it's been pulled out at all. And then a chest x-ray radiograph would show you where the tip is. The goal is obviously for the tip to be in the superior vena cava or the right atrium and not in the brachiocephalic or subclavian veins. The second problem you could have, especially if the PICC line has been pulled back, is that it's thrombosed. The vein around it is thrombosed, especially if it's been pulled back in the subclavian vein. Or if it's a left-sided PICC and it flipped up to the right brachiocephalic, right subclavian vein, which does occasionally happen, especially if it's high SVC and not low. It can certainly just flip up there. And then that vein can actually thrombose. We know that midline lines in the subclavian vein, the thrombosis rate is a lot higher than the ones that are in the SVC. So that could obviously be a problem as well.
What about for the quote-unquote leaking PICC? Now, this can be into a number of categories, you know, leaking, like oozing blood or, you know, serosanguinous or clear fluid. How do you troubleshoot those?
So it depends why it's leaking. Did the patient just, you know, have a little trauma on the arm, or the PICC line got stuck on the zipper and now it's leaking blood, oozing blood around it? For that, it's like any other bleeding thing. You hold manual pressure. It's a vein, low pressure system, compressible site. It will go away with manual pressure. Now, if you're leaking serosanguinous fluid or clear fluid, you have maybe a little bit bigger problem, because then it's probably lymphatic fluid. And it's just bad luck that it is leaking. And there's not really anything that we can really do to fix it other than try some pressure, maybe some Coban, or really just frequent dressing changes. I don't know any good way of fixing those other than putting a PICC line in a different area, like on a, you know, other arm or higher, a little bit higher, which of course is another procedure. So then I usually ask the patients, you know, can you deal with this? How much longer do you need the PICC line? Is it 1 week? Is it 4 weeks? Do you have nursing care? Are you able to change the dressing, or is it going to sit wet on their skin for 5 hours before anybody gets to it? And so those are all kind of very important questions to ask when deciding what to do with that. Often it doesn't get changed. It's just managed conservatively. and the PIC eventually gets pulled out, their issue is resolved. Their infection is, whatever the infection, you know, osteomyelitis, whatever it's for, is resolved.
When you say put a little bit of Coban on there, are you just talking about the site where the PIC comes out of the skin? So like at the insertion site and just putting like an inch wide, like strip of Coban, like a, or are you talking like several inches on either direction of where the insertion was?
There's no standard recommendation for this. And I think that if you ask 10 different IRs, you'll get 10 different answers. And one will say, Coban, that's crazy. And someone else will say, well, I'm going to wrap the entire arm like it's broken. And, you know, I'll just put a little bit of Coban right where the PIC comes out, put a little, you know, 4x4 dressing on it and just very mild compression. Because, again, you don't want to cause a DVT now, right? You just very gentle pressure just to kind of decrease that stuff from oozing. Patient has to be comfortable. Again, it can't be compressing or decreasing the venous outflow from the area. You're just trying to kind of tack it down just a little bit.
Now, what about either malpositioned or fractured tips?
With PIC lines, I don't know that fractured tips are too common, except unless the patients have maybe other lines, like maybe they also have a pacemaker or dialysis, tunnel dialysis catheter or something like that, and things are maybe touching each other. Lines that are placed directly into the subclavian vein and left for long periods of time are the ones that do tend to fracture. And those are usually chest ports, which is why I don't place any, I have never placed a chest port in a subclavian vein, just from the pressure of the catheter, repetitive trauma on the subclavian vein. But I have fished catheters out of the pulmonary arteries from fractured ports. What also happens when the port, like now we're in the port, this is a port problem usually, but now you're injecting chemotherapy in the subclavian vein instead of the SVC. And so it depends on the type of chemo. Some are very desiccating and they can actually sclerose that whole vein down. And now you have a big problem, okay, with the patient having maybe some arm swelling, or now they can't get a fistula, like a dialysis fistula or graft on that arm. That's the reason I don't place subclavian lines usually. I tend to shy away from subclavian lines. I like to preserve the subclavian veins. I've not really seen a PIC line fracture per se, but I have seen the tip, like I said before, kind of migrate to, especially like the bright subclavian vein. And it can cause the same issue there. It can cause thrombosis of the subclavian vein. I have seen them just pulled back. I actually have seen one tied in a knot, but that certainly is not something you should remove yourself. I don't know. I have no idea how that could have happened. So just one more thing about the tip positioning. When I place a PIC line, I place it with fluoroscopic guidance. So I know exactly where the tip is before the patient goes back to wherever they came from, the floor, outpatient, the ER. When sometimes they're placed with these ultrasound guided machines where the tip has, I don't know how it works exactly, but sends a little signal or something. And those you just never 100% sure. I mean, I've had patients where the PIC was placed at another facility and it was, you know, in the IJ. So I don't even know why somebody wouldn't check that before sending the patient home. So you can never know when the patient comes from somewhere else, where is the tip? What's going on with that line?
What if we're suspecting a PIC infection? Should we be holding antibiotics if the patient's stable until we can culture the catheter tip? What are your thoughts on that?
Sure. And this is like a pet peeve of mine, Patrick, is to never hold antibiotics for any reason for any patient, you know, including LP, an abscess, and you want me to aspirate? No, just give them the antibiotics. It's not going to affect the culture results enough that you shouldn't give the patient antibiotics, especially if they're unstable. Just give the antibiotics. So that's number one. Number two, if the patient is unstable, the answer is to make sure you have the patient is lined up. You have access, right? Venous access of some type, and then pull the PIC. PIC lines do have a relatively high infection and thrombosis rate compared to other permanent type, you know, semi-permanent type lines like ports or tunneled central lines which have a cuff under the skin. And so the PIC line should not stay in that long. And so because they get infected and they thrombose the veins. So pull the line if the patient is septic. Okay. And then number three, if the patient is stable and maybe has a fever and you're looking for a source, surely it could be a source, but maybe it's not. So why lose the access if you're not sure? So what we do is you get antibiotic, you draw cultures from the line itself, and then a peripheral stick from somewhere else, an arm, the other arm or leg or whatever, wherever. And then the hospitalist will compare the culture results. And I think the IDSA guidelines state that if the catheter culture has 3 times more colony-forming units than the peripheral culture, then it's considered a line infection. But I don't do that math, though. So we have the hospitalist will do that. So I usually don't recommend pulling the PICC line until we know more.
Is there any role for thrombolytics in terms of declogging a PICC line in the emergency department? Are there any instances in which it's indicated, or just the vast majority of these are going to resolve with increasing your PSI?
Yeah, so it depends on whatever your hospital policy is on, you know, thrombosed catheters. I mean, all different hospitals have different policies. Maybe, I don't know if the ER has policies, but on the floor, the nurses have like to do certain things in a certain row, if that makes sense. But I always recommend trying to flush it first. If it doesn't work, then you can instill the dilute thrombolytic and try flushing it again. I mean, that's certainly an option for most patients.
Last question here. What is it that you want to see and hear that we've done before we call IR? What to you is a good, thorough evaluation before we can and should call it quits and call in the experts on your end of things?
Yeah. So if the line is clotted or clogged, or you can't flush the line, then I just would assume that you've already taken the effort to find a smaller syringe and try to flush it with that, that you've tried the thrombolytics, and then you verify the tip position. That with a chest x-ray or something like that. Or if the patient already has a CT scan for another reason that same day, that would be just fine. But those essentially those three things. Because other than that, the only thing I can do is take the pick out and put a new pick in. I don't have, many other tricks.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, Dr. Solberg. I appreciate your spending some time with us this afternoon. Anything else that we should know?
About pick lines?
Yeah.
So... I think PICC lines definitely have their role in patient care. I tend to favor tunneled central lines through the IJ for long-term antibiotics over PICC lines, but it all depends on institutional policies. And the reason I favor those is because they go through the internal jugular vein. They spare the subclavian vein completely. I never like to ruin patients' access, especially if they're young. Young people come in with crazy infections nowadays. And so I just hate to, no, it's true. And, you just hate to ruin their subclavian veins, have them, scarred and then you really ruin their options for future access. And then future access becomes a huge issue for us when the subclavian veins are thrombosed. So, I actually have a patient whose both subclavian veins are scarred down from a line and from lines, and luckily, his superior vena cava is wide open, so he doesn't have SVC syndrome with the face swelling and the arm swelling, because that's still open, and so he has enough collaterals to get through, but he can't get an AV fistula or graft in his arms for dialysis if he ever needs it.
So basically, everything distal to there is ruined once you scar off a subclavian.
Well, you can't, I don't think you can do dialysis because it's not fast enough flow. Does that make sense? The drainage is not quick enough. So yeah, it is. It's not ruined, but it is in a way, as far as how quick the flow is.
Okay, so it limits flow. So you can maybe have like a peripheral line.
Yeah, you can have a peripheral IV.
But you can't. Okay.
Yeah, but I can't. Yeah, okay. Exactly. But I mean, I can't place a port on this guy, or I can't put in a tunneled dialysis catheter. Now I have to go through IVC, like a translumbar. These are really. Yeah, can you see a patient coming to the ER with a translumbar or transhepatic port? What do you do with that? Yeah, so. Oh,
sounds terrible.
So,
okay.
Yep. So, yeah, that's why I prefer, from that perspective, internal jugular vein. I think that there's, the ID guys prefer subclavian veins. Maybe they have lower infection rates or something like that for central lines. I don't know. I think that was like the teaching in the past, but I prefer internal jugular lines over subclavian lines any day.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. That wraps up this podcast. Thank you so much, Patrick Bafuma and Dr. Solberg, for doing this special on PICC lines. I definitely learned some things from this. I hope you did too. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.